So tonight, exploring tranquility. This whole month, we'll be exploring this one topic of tranquility. Now, tranquility is an interesting topic because it's kind of close. It's sometimes easy to slip into sleepiness, right? There's like not enough energy. You want to have calm energy, relaxed energy, but that's so close to being asleep, so close to drifting off, right? So tranquility has this capacity of being still, being present, being also very alive, very awake. There's a stillness around it. Now, tranquility has this quality of being maybe externally induced. We go to a beautiful landscape and beautiful, really arranged room, going to a meditation hall. And there can be a sense of tranquility that you just kind of resonate with. You kind of fall into. At least we long for these. There's other times of tranquility is maybe we long for something more exciting. We kind of find it boring after a while. We want something more jazzy to kind of pick us up. And so tranquility is this process of what's the right sweet spot of how that arises. Does it arise from this external circumstances, or is it more of an internal one that arises? Or is it both? This internal tranquility starts to transcend the different conditions and situations in our life. We can actually call it forth or start to recognize that it's here. So sometimes we can think of tranquility as something I have to get to or obtain. And I think it's more of a quality of subtraction, a quality of releasing things which stay outside of that. And this is an interesting way of looking at it, because busyness, we can be in this busyness around us, we can be in a lot of chaos and a lot of noise, but can there still be this inner access to tranquility? Or vice versa, we could be out in a very still environment and just feeling this inner noise, this inner busyness. I think I mentioned last week, I was backpacking when I was just a teenager up in the Sandia Mountains and hiking along, beautiful area. But my mind was just so busy. It just was filled with thoughts. And I was, for some reason, I was aware that the thoughts were there and I couldn't let go of them. There's a kind of obsession with that. There was so many years ago. And as meditators, we start to fall, maybe start to really are longing for that quality of tranquility. Maybe we see these images of the Buddha, we see images of people meditating, and they always look very relaxed, very still, very composed, very at peace. There's a sense of tranquility that emanates from them. And we long for that within our busyness of our lives, within our chaos of our lives, to find that stillness. But this is an interesting piece, because if we start to chase that tranquility, if it starts to become a goal or a way that we measure our practice, that actually creates this distance between how things really are and where we want them to be. And that sense of separation makes tranquility go further away. Tranquility is one of those things we can start to, we have those experiences, we fall into it in meditation, and we want to have more of that. We want to lean into it. But it becomes like the cat or dog chasing its own tail. The faster it goes, the further away that tail goes. So tranquility is also, in the context of this transcendental origination, I think is important to notice that and how it's in contrast to dependent origination. So transcendental origination is, if you're just joining us, it's really this process. I think there's around 10 steps or so, or 10 links that move from this place of suffering, this place of endless suffering, this ongoing suffering, in a way that suffering perpetuates suffering, into this moment of faith. Faith that there's actually a way off that. There's a way to transcend that, to see through our suffering. And that's where this transcendental part of it comes in, transcending our suffering. And so as we go through this year, we'll go through each of these different links and understand how that moves us toward awakening, toward our hearts opening. So in that context, it's helpful to look at it from that context, because if we leave it just as by itself, it's a nice quality to have when it comes. We can start to chase it or be calm with it. But from the context of transcendental origination, it's this process of our hearts starting to unbind. It's starting to open. Things are starting to let go. So the first link, if you remember, is that of faith, which actually comes from the place of suffering, the place of dukkha. We experience dukkha, we experience suffering in our lives, and usually what we do, we relate to it in a way that reinforces that suffering, makes that suffering guaranteed to come back in a different form at some point in the future. And this is described in dependent origination. But there's this moment of faith that maybe there's another way. There's actually a possibility that I don't have to always follow that. And there's a seeing of that. For those of you, how many were a part of the ox herding pictures that we did? Right, a few of you, right? So that, if you recall those pictures, is a depiction from the Zen tradition of another way of the spiritual path unfolding. And it starts with this sense of, you know, glimpsing the ox, or this sense of searching for the ox representing our true nature, representing awakening, and different ways to define that. And there's that initial listening, right? Now from that, there comes the next stage, which is a lot of joy, this excitement that, wow, there's this potential for being free. We have maybe a glimpse of that. We can start to see things cooling down. And this other way of relating to suffering, we just create this almost cycle of burning ourselves, of causing more and more suffering. And it's endless. And one way to describe that is this, it's hot, it's burning, it's on fire. And so practice starts to cool all that down. And when that starts to cool down, there can be a quality of joy, excitement that comes. Sometimes that can be very intense. As last month we talked about what's sometimes called rapture, this intense energy that's almost the knots, the constrictions that we're holding start to release. And in that releasing, there's this energy that comes forth. And now we go to tranquility this month. So tranquility in this context is this rebalancing of energy, but it's not like falling asleep. It's not becoming like disassociated or disconnected or becoming dull or removed or numb. It's about this calming quality, this quality of stillness that comes in, but still has this quality of energy with it. So that's why tranquility has an aliveness to it, has a vibrancy to it. And if you ever go to an environment like a beautiful mountain lake or a landscape, it can feel very tranquil, but you can also sense the energy of nature that's also there, the vibrancy, the quality of just the vastness of nature that's present. And so tranquility also has that quality. So it's not just being still, not being just dampened down. It's not like we just turn the dimmer switch and we've knocked all our energy down. There's a stillness, there's a quiet, our hearts are at peace, and yet there's this awakening, this aliveness that's there. And much of it, often when I experience it, there's a quality of letting things be just how they are, that I've really dropped my argument with how I wanted this moment to look, how I wanted me to be in this moment. I'm actually meeting it how it is. And this is one of the pathways we can discover in our own life. In the midst of all the chaos and difficulty, where is the rub? What is not being allowed in this moment? And if there's a quality of actually acknowledging it, simply acknowledging it, having compassion for that suffering, the difficulty, tranquility can often arise as an effect of that. Now, often when we talk about allowing the moment to be just how it is, it's really... the words are allow this moment to be how it is, not to allow the future to go, you know, whichever direction it's going. There's a quality of intentionality. There's a quality of choice. There's a quality of helping our own lives and the lives of the people around us, our children's lives, you know, be in a better place. So it's not like we forget about goals and about aspirations, about our energy toward things. It's about this very moment. Can't be anything that it, other than it is. Now, tranquility, again, in this quality of transcendental origination, then leads to happiness next month. Happiness is this quality of peace and ease regardless of circumstances. So most of us, our happiness is kind of conditional, right? If we have the right people around us, we have the right experiences, the right sounds, the right temperature, then we're happy. But some of those get tweaked and then we lose that quality of happiness. And yet as meditators, we're training ourselves to kind of expand that capacity. You know, often on retreats, it's kind of a real pressure cooker of this dynamic, that we can have a very still hall that, you know, you have your food taken care of, you have most of your chores are done by other people, you just have one little job, and you practice, and everyone else is practicing around you. And maybe there's one person who's making a noise that you find irritating, and you throw out everything else except that one noise. That's what you obsess about. So you take all this tranquility around you that's just roaring. It's just so vibrant, and yet you focus on this one thing, which isn't the way that you want it to be. Or you do that internally. It's like, oh, only if I can get rid of that itch or that pain, or only if I could figure out this issue in my life. Right? So this is the mind wanting to go back into this cycle of suffering. So this is an opposition or an alternative pathway to dependent origination, which is really the cycle of how we create suffering in an ongoing way. And really the core of it is this sense of becoming, this sense of me who takes shape in that, the sense of creating this sense of self. So the Buddha described this very detailed, elaborate, and sophisticated, and also a very clear way of describing how that sense of self arises, and then how that creates suffering. And it's a powerful process. You know, it's a powerful process that we've all rehearsed thousands and thousands, if not millions of times. And it has a lot of momentum. And so it takes energy to be able to go through to change that, to actually have a different choice. That's where that quality of faith comes in, transcendental origination comes in. So tranquility is interesting because it can become something that we're chasing after, becomes a goal, a way that we compare and evaluate our meditation. Well, this meditation was a good one because I felt tranquil. Have you ever thought that, or you know, maybe even said that? Other times, meditation is not tranquil. It's full of busyness, and the mind is struggling, or your body's hurting, and you label that as a bad meditation, right? Because it wasn't tranquil. But that very quality of labeling it creates a dynamic. It makes you tense with how the moment actually is. So the secret is, okay, maybe the mind right now is busy, but can I find something that's aware of that? Kind of find something that's able to be present even within the busyness. Can something be aware of how much the mind is thinking? That little sliver has an element of tranquility to it, has an element of seeing, of allowing, and knowing with clarity, with wisdom. Right? So that's so. It's often very slender, it's very thin, and we often overlook it. We don't put our energy into it. But if we start to notice it and to actually highlight that, and that starts to grow, that becomes much more of this orienting factor in how we practice. This links us back into tranquility. Because when that starts to grow and we're able to just meet this gestalt of this body sitting, body breathing, body feeling, with a quality of openness, receptivity, then tranquility is often an effect of that. It's a natural experience of that. So tranquility is something that it's essential in our practice to have, right? If you don't have tranquility, it's hard to see clearly. It's hard to be able to perceive what's actually arising. We're so busy. We're so churned up. Tranquility allows that seeing to come. And that's how this transcendental origination will develop. It's like that example of the jar with mud in it, we shake it up, that keeps it all suspended. We stop moving it, we allow it to just rest, the mud starts to settle. There starts to be clarity that comes from that. And same thing with our practice. And that's one way to phrase it or to frame it is that this is a process of letting our fires start to quiet down, letting the turmoil start to quiet. And the fastest way to allow that turmoil to quiet is to not make an argument with the fact that turmoil is there. To not fight with the fact that turmoil is there, but actually learn to have compassion for it, to open to it. And then it starts to naturally quiet. That water starts to become more clear. Tranquility starts to arise from it. And when it's here, we relax into it. We allow it to deepen and grow. And when it's not here, that's okay. It just processes, how do I meet this moment? Just how it is. All right, so let's just sit quietly for a couple moments, and then we'll take a break. All right, welcome back. So in a few minutes or moments, we'll go into some breakout rooms. And Carla, if you could get those prepared for those online, doing 4 to 5 people, if you're able to do that. You're able to do that? Okay, I can do it if you want. But wait till I say go. All right, so these groups, these are a chance for you to discuss this topic, kind of bring it more alive, because we can have these our own internal relationship with it. When we actually go to try to explain it or talk about it to another person, that takes it to a different level of integration and understanding. Same thing when we hear someone else's experience, to be really listening in a more deep way. You know, what's your understanding of tranquility? So in these groups also, it's really about sharing your experience around the Dharma. It's not about giving advice. It's not about trying to solve someone else's problems. It's really just listening and sharing from your own experience. Try to monitor the time. We'll have 20 minutes. So, you know, monitor how much you're sharing. If you're sharing a lot, give space after you share for someone else to step forward. And if you haven't stepped forward, you know, have that courage to come forth. So the questions are really around tranquility from the homework. So I just put that in the chat for those online. I'll throw it up on the board here for those here. I don't know if that's any better. Where is tranquility found? Is it external or internal? What's the absence of tranquility? What is released to allow tranquility to arise? Is tranquility found in thoughts and thinking? And can you take ownership of tranquility? Right? So just thinking or sharing around those topics or whatever else comes up for you around tranquility. Does that make sense? All right, so those in the room, I invite you to find, well, groups around 4 to 5 is a good number. So find 3 to 4 other people, and we can open those online when you're ready, Carla. Okay, everyone's back. Okay, welcome back. So we have a chance now to tell me what you found out about the tranquility. Where is it found? Is it external, internal? Can you take ownership of it? Or anything else you'd like to discuss around tranquility or any other aspect of the Dharma? All right, so thank you. Just Lee's going to come around with the mic. And those online, just raise your physical hand and I'll call you. Okay, go ahead, Kathy.
Yes, thanks, Tim. This is so interesting because I don't really have any idea what tranquility is. It's not something I aspired to yet in my life, but I'm not going to give up. You said allowing the moment to be as it is. Okay, so that's something this feels like a home, a place of home for me. But tranquility feels like something that is going to be smooth and flat like a lake, you know? Mm. But we only live in this little moment that we're in right now, right? So tranquility is going to be this little momentary teeny thing.
Well, it's like it's true. We can only live moment by moment, And yet each moment kind of sets up the potential for the next moment, right? So if I'm you know, acting in an angry way, it's going to tend to kind of have a certain momentum. There's going to be a certain way I'm going to be continue to be angry or tend to continue to be reactive. Same thing with tranquility, is if there's a sense of tranquility arising or just allowing the moment to be how it is, that tends to precondition the next moment to have that same quality.
Yes, that makes lots of sense. Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, so it's kind of like you're taking a, you know, if you did like a graph of it, like the average is going to be more on the tranquil side, for example. Yeah, so it's like it's a bunch of moments, but each of those moments kind of spreads out there. And then you also start to get a sense that tranquility, see, how should I say this? If it's something that I'm trying to get to, that I'm trying to discover or bring forth, it's going to be a little bit fragile. But if instead there's a quality of just relaxing into the stillness of the moment, tranquility is one of those things that's in that landscape. And you start to see that that's really outside of me. It's outside of anything that I made, and yet I've relaxed into it. So it's, you know, it's like different. The way I'm holding it anyway tonight is like we can hold these different qualities of stillness, of calm, of equanimity, tranquility. These are all kind of elements of that field when our system's in balance, when there's a sense of our energies aren't too hyped up or too depressed. There's kind of this nice balance of energy, and also at the same time this clarity, this sense of presence.
Great. Thank you, Jim. That's good.
You probably have more tranquility than you give yourself credit for. That's right. Good pat on the back. We all need that. Anyone else like to ask or share anything? Too tranquil to speak? All right, go ahead, Dan. You're still muted.
Okay. Two thoughts came up in our group. One was, it seems in the current political climate that people feel an obligation to be upset constantly, even though at the same time, it's not apparent why being constantly upset would make anything better. So an upset that motivates a political action that's skillful seems sensible, but it just feels like to me, and maybe in our small group, but around me, there's a constant, it's almost like if you're a responsible individual, you should be constantly upset, certainly not tranquil. So that was one set of thoughts we had. The other was, to me anyway, still trying to understand what is dukkha, what is of the four noble truths, what's the pain that is inescapable that comes with being human, which seems to me there's a lot of even the political situation, which is inescapable, that Homo sapiens just cannot seem yet to organize themselves in a way that is not at times cruel and greedy and aversive and even, you know, violent. And that just seems to be, like I assign that to dukkha. And then I'm left to say, okay, if it's always been that way, then how does one find some sense of equanimity? And the last thought we had was, you know, there must have been a lot of crap going on 2,600 years ago that the Buddha felt the need to create this whole path, and Trump wasn't his president. So there must be something about the human condition which is timeless. So maybe that's more than enough thoughts for one fella for an evening.
Yeah, thank you for sharing all that. Yeah, it's you know, the Buddha's time was not a time of ease and peace. You know, there was a lot of war going on, a lot of strife, a lot of class division. You know, there's just a lot of humans causing suffering on each other, right? So, and then plus there's the overlay of our own very personal. Even if we, you know, lived in a perfect world with everyone happy, we still are going to have this inconvenient thing that we're going to get old, right? We're going to get sick. We're going to get, we're going to die. And so that's part of what what motivated the Buddha to really find that sense of where is their freedom despite that, even though my body is subject to age, to illness, to death, where in spite of that is there this sense of peace, this sense of freedom, right? And then there, certainly there's this, the way that humans just have this compulsion to cause harm to each other, you know, and how you know, strong that is this day and age. But yeah, it's true that it's like the same pattern just keeps coming up in different characters, different people in charge, different people who are being attacked and victimized. And it can be really deeply discouraging. You know, what's the optional dukkha in that? But coming back to like, is it kind of a betrayal if we're feeling tranquil? You know, are we betraying the outrage by feeling the sense of inner peace? And I would argue that, back to your other point, is how do we, are we actually effectual? How do we actually make change? How do we actually start to move that dial? I'm not sure, I mean, there's sometimes in history that being really reactive and violent has moved things, but often it equally causes more problems. You know, but from a place of calmness inside, this inner tranquility, we have the capacity to maybe make real change. And it might be small things, having the right conversation at the right time, making that right connection, being the right witness, putting your voice where it actually is helpful. But it's a complex question and situation, and you know, we tend to our own inner ease or inner peace, but we are participants and, you know, stewards of this world, and we have that obligation. So it's an ongoing koan. How do we walk that? So there's a few more thoughts back at yours. All right, anyone else like to ask or share anything? All right, Suze.
In our group, we kind of, as we discussed, it seems like tranquility and equanimity have a lot of similarities in terms of not arguing with the way things are. And even when we don't like them, we can still be okay with it. We can still find our way through it. And what do you think of those two being kind of similar?
I think they're very related, and you know, they affect each other. This question came up last week too, is what, you know, they seem like they're very similar qualities. And the way I'm going to answer it tonight, which might be different than next week, is you can almost think as equanimity as part of the Brahma-Viharas. It's this relational way of being in life. You know, so just like there's a metta way, there's a compassionate way, there's a sympathetic joy, there's the equanimity, being equanimous, there's that kind of dynamic thing. As an effect of that is tranquility. So you can almost say equanimity is the relationship, and what, one of the things that arises from that is this sense of tranquility. And I'm not sure, you know, if it goes the other way in the same way. I think tranquility, I think it has that potential, but I can see it more clearly coming out, rising out of equanimity. Again, this is tonight's answer. Tomorrow might be a different answer, but that's what's coming to mind. Because I can see tranquility, especially like we have a real calm space around us. Everything is good and easy. It's easy to be easily close to things and equally near things. We don't feel like we have to do much. Equanimity is really tested when things are not so good, when things are more struggling, are difficult, you know, and so in a tranquil environment, we may not have that same rub to see if it comes forth. So yeah, it's an interesting thing to see, to explore. What's the relationship between tranquility, equanimity, you know, calmness? I would tend to put equanimity kind of as this bigger umbrella, one of the really the divine abodes, the Brahma-Vihara.
But I was also thinking about equanimity as one of the paramis.
Yeah.
And not necessarily the Brahma-Viharas. So it's that quality of being with and allowing without, so, yeah. Okay, thanks, Tim.
Yeah, I think this, yeah, I'll, each of these words, I mean, we're using the English translation, you know, there's the Pali translation, which probably if I was a better scholar, I could say, okay, this is how we could parse it out. But I guess the message is that these words have a lot of meaning. There's a lot of ways we can explore them and play with them. And I think the biggest question is, how does it help my practice? How does it help me relate to life? You know, and how do I engage in a way that's, whether it's a parami or the transcendental origination, or is it part of the seven factors and all these different ways it shows up? All right, anyone else? Yes.
So all of the questions that you posed seem pretty slippery to the group, and I think there were probably more more questions that arose than answers, I'm guessing they would agree. So especially the one with the internal and external, because it to me it feels a bit maybe naive to say that the external doesn't have any role to play in whether I'm feeling tranquil or not. Like if I'm at a really pretty lake or something, I'm more likely to feel tranquil than at some like really chaotic environment. So my tentative answers right now, based on the discussion we had, was that it feels like the internal and the external need to meet somewhere in the middle. So if I'm not feeling tranquil, there's some gap between what the internal thinks of as, oh, this is a situation that would be okay and would be acceptable, and what the actual situation is. So if either the situation improved or my acceptance muscle was able to lift more weight, then it could somewhere meet in the middle.
Yeah.
And my other tentative answer that's like kind of coming to my mind is that it's more like a process rather than being a binary thing of, oh, either there is tranquility or there isn't tranquility, where the internal kind of feeds into the external. So the more tranquility that exists in my experience, the more likely it is that I would seek out skillful action, like taking care of my health or like showing up to this meeting, that would then increase the internal tranquility that would again feed into taking more external action. And then if this process continues for a long time, then the tranquility will just keep increasing.
Yeah. I think those are all great ways to think about it and approach it. I think those are all really valid ways of seeing it, because it is a process. Yeah, I think that's not a static thing. It's how we are meeting this moment can condition more tranquility or less tranquility. And there is that, I like that sense of that muscle of acceptance. I can build that. So there's, you know, I think we may notice this in our own practice, that there's, before we practice, there's situations or environments that we had no tranquility in at all. And after we practice for a while, we can say, well, actually, I'm able to be a little bit more at ease with it, a little bit more okay with it, there's a little bit more tranquility. And yeah, it's not an all or none, it is a process. And we can also, you know, one piece to just throw out that you probably thought of too, is I can be in a tranquil environment, and if I'm able to connect with it and resonate with it, it helps my internal tranquility. But how many times we've been in a beautiful, tranquil environment, and we're like obsessed about that conflict we had and that deadline, and we're not connecting with it. So I think that was, and also there's the capacity of being inwardly tranquil tends to affect the environment around us too. You know, people start to calm down, or you know, so it's really a dynamic thing. So I appreciate all the nuances you explored there.
Thank you so much.
All right, anyone else? Just Lee up front here.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for the wonderful talk tonight. I guess this is about transcendental dependent arising more as a whole. But we could talk about it within even the relation of tranquility. So when we're talking about this path, are we talking? I feel like we could talk about it within like a moment, even, right? Or we could talk about it just as a lifetime. Mm-hmm. Where is the Buddha kind of like leading? Like, where is he pointing us to in a way? Is it more like we get to like pitti and we experience pitti for long enough, like in a longer mm-hmm. period of time, and then that leads us to like a longer period of tranquility? Mm-hmm. Or is it more of like the coming back to it frequently, and then we, I don't know if my question is a little,
it can be both, right? Okay. I think they're both possible. So one thing is kind of the progression or the development of our practice. So there's a thing called the progress of insight, which actually has all these different stages that ideally you don't know that you're going through. You're just practicing and they're just kind of unfolding in a certain way, different ways the energy shows up, you know, how the contractions show up. So I think that's part of this transcendental origination or transcendental arising, however you want to say it, is this process of our energy changing, our hearts changing, inclination. There's this, the way that we start to see things in a more and more clear way, you know, but it's not necessarily like this, you know, these linear things. And it might be a process, like you might be on a retreat, or maybe you're practicing and there's a sense of faith that's really driving you, and then there's a joy, and then there's a sense of that pity, that, you know, the energy is so strong, and then there's tranquility, you know, and then there's what comes after that, the happiness, you know, and then there's this sense of seeing more clearly that sets us up for that. That could be something that's more kind of a development process in one single period, whether like a retreat period, or it might be something that you're kind of cycling back through. Probably for most of us, it's more of a kind of a cycling thing that you maybe there's different pieces which are predominant at different times. And perhaps there needs to be some access to all of these for things to deepen along the way, is my sense of that. But whether it's linear, you know, it may not be very linear. Yeah. There's the didactic way of expressing it and talking about it, and then there's reality of how it shows up. All right, anyone else? Maybe time for one or two more questions if there's anyone. Okay, looks like we've come to our tranquil ending or awkward silence. I don't know which is which sometimes. Probably depends on the person, right? So next, just first I'd like to thank all the volunteers that made tonight possible. You know, without their support, you know, we wouldn't be able to gather like this. There's really, sometimes they're unseen what is all happening. Sometimes they're more obvious, but it's an essential part of how we stay alive as an organization. So your participation, you know, is really valuable. So Beth and Deborah were the two greeters or holding down the fort. And just a special call out to Beth, who's been going around cleaning things. You know, she was cleaning behind the shoe racks and all these little pieces we don't even aware of. So that's sometimes unseen, but very appreciated. And cleaning is one of those things that it's easy to kind of overlook and take for granted, but just take people's participation. So I'm sure, Beth, you would be happy to have more people help.
Yes.
Yeah, so go talk to Beth if you like to help clean in small or big ways. And thank you, Deborah. And also, Braden helped with or did the set up the AV, helped us connect with the online interface so wonderfully. And then online we had Carla, who was doing the tech support, and Tamira, who did the greeting. So thank you all. And then next week we'll have Tuari Salah here offering a another talk, maybe doing some exploration of VSAC also. All right, so we'll have a wonderful evening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you all. Thanks online. Nice to see you all here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.